Deadline, the United States says it will transfer another $100 million in military assistance to Ukraine. The EU announces new sanctions on Russia's oil sector, causing global crude prices to jump to above $100 per barrel. And also in our headlines, China reports over 20,000, that is, new coronavirus cases, its highest daily tally since the start of the pandemic. Our top story for this half hour: on day 42 of Russia's military offensive in Ukraine, authorities in the eastern Luhansk region are urging residents to evacuate. Luhansk governor says Russian troops are destroying everything on their path and that the people in the area need to leave immediately. Kiev and pro-Russian forces are blaming each other for the explosion of an industrial acid tank that happened in the city earlier. There are also reports of Russia's bombardment of Kramatorsk and damage to an empty school there. Meanwhile, Moscow is reporting that Russian guards have been fired at in Kursk, a city on its border. And the port city of Mariupol continues to remain one of the worst affected areas. The city's mayor says the situation there has now gone beyond a humanitarian disaster. And the U.S. is sending another $100 million in aid to Ukraine in response to its repeated pleas for more Western weapons to fight Russian forces. The aid will be used to buy Javelin anti-armor missiles. Earlier this month, Washington said it was providing $300 million in security assistance to Ukraine that included laser-guided rocket systems, armed drones, ammunition, and other equipment. The newest package brings the total U.S. military aid to Ukraine since the beginning of the war in late February to over $1.7 billion. Over 25 nations have joined in purchasing and delivering weapons to bolster Ukraine's defenses. And the European Commission has proposed new sanctions against Russia over its military operation in Ukraine.
We need to increase our pressure further. So today we are proposing to take our sanctions a step further. We will make them broader and sharper so that they cut even deeper into the Russian economy.
The Commission's president said the body is after banning oil imports from Russia and denying Russian ships entry to EU ports. The announcement caused oil prices to jump further, with Brent, North Sea crude, and West Texas Intermediate gaining more than 0.5% to end up over $100 per barrel on Tuesday. Ursula von der Leyen said the new sanctions would also include a ban on Russian coal imports. In Germany, the economy ministry has said the country would likely have to shut down some of its power plants if it immediately stopped the coal imports. In the meantime, the United States and its allies are reportedly considering more anti-Russia sanctions, including against Russian banks and investment in the country. The sanctions would also target Russian government officials and their families. Well, China is recording the highest daily COVID cases since the beginning of the pandemic, despite using strict measures. The National Health Commission says it has registered more than 20,000 cases across the country, with Shanghai accounting for more than 80% of the tally. China has been trying to keep the daily cases low by imposing strict restrictions on and mass testing. Despite that, there's been a huge increase in new infections in recent weeks owing to a mutation of the Omicron variant. Since then, Shanghai has put all its 26 million residents under lockdown. Nearly 40,000 medical personnel have been deployed to the city to deal with the situation. The medical operation in Shanghai is the biggest since the Wuhan lockdown in early 2020, the city where the first cases appeared. France's presidential election is coming up in less than a week. Early polls and analyses suggest that the race is going to be tighter than expected. Voters will be casting their ballots on Sunday. If no candidate wins a 50% majority, the top two will move ahead to a runoff on the 24th of April. The polls are projecting that incumbent Emmanuel Macron and far-right leader Marine Le Pen will advance to the second round in a repeat of their 2017 duel, but this time with a much narrower gap. Macron has promised reforms, calling Le Pen's party a clan with unchanged policies, and Le Pen has downplayed what many refer to as Macron's automatic re-election, saying she's seeking radical political changes. For two decades, no sitting French president has been re-elected for a second term. And the names of top Downing Street aides who have been issued fines by London's Metropolitan Police for their roles in gatherings during COVID lockdown continue to be leaked. The latest casualty, Downing Street's former ethics chief, who has since stepped down. So far, the Prime Minister's office has resisted calls to identify those issued with fines by the Met. They've also failed to state whether Boris Johnson is one of the 20 who must now pay for his role in breaching lockdown rules. Amina Taylor has more from the British capital.
The Partygate scandal lingers on, with the roll call of shame growing ever longer with every leak. On Tuesday, more bad news for Prime Minister Boris Johnson's inner circle, as the identity of another high-profile COVID rule-breaker was revealed. Helen McNamara, ironically the government's former ethics chief, has apologised for her part in attending a party on June 18, 2020, in the Cabinet Office during the height of COVID restrictions, calling it an error in judgment. There has been criticism of the way the Partygate scandal continues to be addressed by the government and why the identities of those issued with fines has still not been made public.
It's fairly amazing. If either you or me had been fined for breaking lockdown, I'm sure our names would have been in the public domain, in the media, etc. Here we have very high-profile people indeed who have been fined and we're not allowed supposed to know their names. Now, some names have leaked out. We know that Helen McNamara was incredibly in charge of ethics and propriety for Downing Street. And she has been fined. We know that Kate Josephs, who credibly was running the COVID task force at the time, had a leaving party. She went off to Sheffield City Council to get a new job. She was in charge of the COVID task force and was breaking the COVID lockdown restrictions.
With the next phase of the Sue Gray report expected to be published in May, there is mounting pressure for full disclosure to avoid further embarrassment.
Parliamentarians, many of them from the government's own benches, are growing tired of the constant drip-drip of leaks and names, with every week seemingly bringing fresh revelations. Whilst there have been pushes to have full transparency over Partygate, there has been some resistance from the very heart of government. Seemingly, some argue, so the public loses interest.
Despite the Prime Minister seemingly benefiting from other issues like Ukraine taking centre stage, there is still a sense of anger and injustice levelled at Boris Johnson and his colleagues who flouted the very rules they created.
I think it matters for ordinary people because many of us were told we couldn't go to a funeral of a loved one, we couldn't go to a wedding, we couldn't go to many things. Close relatives, including parents and loved ones, dying. And they weren't allowed to see them prior to the death. So I think ordinary people feel that there is one law for them in regards to the lockdown over coronavirus and one law for other people at the top in Downing Street who could get away with having parties, could get away with breaking the restrictions which the rest of us had to put up with.
The Met says investigations continue with the prospects of more fines being issued. Amina Taylor, London.
Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban, one of Europe's longest-serving leaders, has won a landslide victory in elections held on Sunday. Under Orban, Hungary has repeatedly clashed with EU over several issues, including the rule of law. We've discussed his victory and what it would mean for Hungary's relations with the bloc in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Time now for the news review. Now, Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban, one of Europe's longest-serving leaders, has won a landslide victory in elections held on Sunday. His party, Fidesz, won two-thirds of parliament seats, given a crushing defeat to the opposition alliance. Under Orban, Hungary has repeatedly clashed with the EU over several issues, including the rule of law. His fourth consecutive term in office is likely to broaden the crack within the bloc further, with some people labeling Orban's victory as a new headache for the EU. Okay, that's the storyline. Let me invite two guests and ask their opinion regarding this. So, Paula Raffone, Secretary General of the CIPI Foundation, is joining me from Brussels. Also with us will be James Twitty, journalist and commentator on international affairs in Plymouth. Welcome, gentlemen. Now, Paula, let's begin with you. So, you just heard the story, so what's going on in Hungary? The first question is, what made Prime Minister Orbán win this again and stay in power, and what would it mean for his country and the EU?
Well, the elections were pretty good, I mean, in terms of procedural handling of it. It has been said also by the OSCE, although there are some systemic problems which existed since the past and remained also during these elections. So Mr. Orbán has been elected fully with a landslide vote. And this reinforces his government and his position. And he will continue maintaining the position that he has had towards the EU and the attempt from the EU to accuse Hungary of breaking or not respecting the values of the European Union, including the respect of rule of law. We will see what happens, but it will be anyway a very complicated, slow, lengthy discussion between the Hungarian government and the Brussels authorities, which will take months to materialize in anything concrete.
Okay, James, let's hear your side of the story. And why should Orbán be a headache for the EU?
Well, he's broken ranks with the EU on a number of issues, but this is why he's been re-elected, I think, because the election, of course, happened a month after the war in Ukraine began, and Orbán's government refused to follow the other European Union countries and NATO countries, and, you know, Britain and the US, including Britain and the US, in putting sanctions on Russia and generally being aggressive towards Russia. And as a result, Hungarians are not facing the same problems of their, you know, household energy bills going up by 50% or 100%. And they, you know, they don't really have to live in fear of being press ganged into the war in some way, you know, if it escalates any further and NATO gets involved. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously these are obvious reasons why he's won. Now, the European Union likes to talk about European values, which they, you know, claim to, they claim anything, you know, it is what the European Union defines it as. And they claim a kind of monopoly on them, that they have, you know, that those values are exclusively European and the rest of the world doesn't have those values, like democracy or something, you know. So, yes, and any country that kind of turns away from the political agenda, of the centralized political agenda of the EU, of course, gets condemned, like Poland has been, the Czech Republic has been, and Hungary. Okay. Hungary has not allowed people trafficking on its territory, for instance, which has limited the flow of you know, whether you call them refugees or asylum seekers or economic migrants to Germany, but Germany wants economic migrants. Hungary is not participating in this economic war on Russia either. So, of course, it's being denounced as some kind of dictatorship in the heart of Europe.
Right. Paolo, we've been seeing this happening in Europe with the rise and emergence of some candidates, contenders, and political figures from the far right. Now we have Marine Le Pen in France, for instance, in a tight race with incumbent Macron, and then we have also Orbán there in Hungary. What's behind the rise of these rightist figures in Europe?
Well, first of all, there is a tradition, because Europe has been traditionally a conservative political space with tendency to some kind of rightist type of government. So it's not a big surprise. The surprise is the left in Europe, which is which is something usually not in the majority, and instead we have a majority now of governments leaning on the left. So this is not a big deal. I mean, and then to call them extreme right or extreme left, I mean, this is something for the media to play with. In fact, these are consolidated conservative groupings that are trying to defend the identity of their nations, proposing alternative ways to be together in a European space which is not under this strict EU-controlled umbrella. And this sentiment is quite spread around Europe. I mean, we are talking about Hungary and France now, but in Poland is the same situation. And it's quite interesting that Poland was accused of violating the rules on rule of law, but now nobody's saying it again because Poland is so necessary in the war in Ukraine. But Hungary is put again under the hotspot of the European Commission. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a sentiment which is quite normal in Europe and not necessarily goes to the far right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much for your input and contribution. Paolo Raffone, Secretary General of the CIPI Foundation in Brussels. James Tweedy, journalist and commentator on international affairs.
Elsewhere, in Sri Lanka, rather, the government has been facing widespread protests against its handling of the worst economic crisis in decades, but President Gotabaya Rajapaksa has no intention to resign. The cabinet minister says the president won't quit under any circumstances. Meanwhile, doctors have joined the chorus of discontent with the government by holding protests. They say the entire health system is on the verge of collapse due to shortages of medicine. Earlier, President Rajapaksa revoked a state of emergency after 41 lawmakers quit the ruling coalition, leaving the government in a minority. On Monday, he dissolved the cabinet in hope of forming a unity government, but his newly appointed finance minister resigned after only a day in office. The opposition has also rejected entering a coalition with the government and is calling for the president to resign. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
On the first day of Ramadan, the Zionist regime's forces shot and killed three Palestinians before dawn on April 2nd in occupied Palestine. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by the staff of Crescent International. This article is published under the heading, Zionist Occupiers Continue Killing Spree of Palestinians. Here's the details. On the first day of Ramadan, the Zionist regime forces shot and killed three Palestinians before dawn on April 2nd in occupied Palestine. The killings occurred when the Zionist regime occupation forces ambushed a vehicle near Jenin City. The vehicle carrying three members of Al-Quds Brigades of Islamic Jihad was blocked by a bus full of occupation troops around 2 a.m. near the junction of Araba village. The Zionist special forces jumped out of the bus and started firing at the vehicle carrying the three men. Saeb Abhara, 30, Khalil Tawalba, 24, and Saif Abu Lipta, 25, were seriously wounded, but the Zionist regime occupiers blocked Palestinian ambulances from providing medical help. The Palestinian Red Crescent confirmed that the Zionist regime occupiers prevented its ambulances from approaching the location of the incident. The three Palestinians bled to death. The Zionists also withheld their bodies after murdering them in cold blood. The occupation forces alleged that the Palestinians opened fire at them when they attempted to arrest them, which prompted a gunfight. Four Zionist regime troops were wounded. One of them is in critical condition, according to Zionist occupation forces. They also called for reinforcements. Immediately, a large number of Zionist occupation troops swarmed the area, terrorizing Palestinian villagers. Islamic Jihad leader in Jenin, Khadar Adnan, denounced the Zionist regime's aggressors who have been targeting the village for several days. Jenin is being targeted because over the past week, Palestinians have carried out shooting attacks against the Zionists, killing 11 of them. Jenin's resistance has intensified over the last year, causing alarm among the Zionists. This has aroused the Zionist regime's wrath. Only they can kill Palestinians. The oppressed and occupied are not allowed to resist, according to this logic. Islamic Jihad's Al-Quds Brigades issued a statement saying they mourn the death of the three hero fighters. Two of martyrs were from Jenin and one from Tulkarm. 2 days earlier, on March 31st, Zionist regime occupation forces raided Jenin in an attempt to arrest some Palestinians, but the Zionist regime forces were pushed back. The trigger-happy Zionists shot and killed two Palestinian civilians protesting the Zionist regime's raid into their village. While attacks on Jenin are continuing, Zionist settlers have also intensified their provocations at Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. There are fears of serious clashes on the holy compound because of the Zionist regime's provocations.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Ukraine-Russia conflict going on. Kiev complaining to the UN Security Council of Daesh-style butchering of Ukrainians by Russian forces. Moscow denies this and says that it's meant to defame its forces. The U.S. president wants President Putin tried in court over war crimes. Europe is considering clapping further sanctions, this time on Russian oil and coal. At the same time, talks are ongoing between the belligerent side. So what's next? Welcome to The Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafian. Allow me to introduce our guests in this episode of The Spotlight. Editor of The Veterans Today, Mike Harris, joining us out of Phoenix, Arizona. Also with us will be a member of Ukrainian Parliament, Yaroslav Zhelezniak, out of Kiev.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome both to the show. Now, Mike, my first question for you. Russia has suspended operations, as you might have heard, near capital Kiev, which it says is a sign of goodwill for negotiations to go on more smoothly. But NATO is saying it's going to reinforce operations in the east and south. So what's the situation like in Ukraine? What's going on?
Well, I believe that the Russian forces are trying to reorganize and restructure their police action into Ukraine. And the problem here is that the ongoing NATO expansion, trying to get Ukraine into this, Russia viewed this as a clear and present danger to their existence and sovereignty as a country. And the US and NATO are both on the wrong side of history. So let's hope that, let's pray for peace in Ukraine, that any bloodshed and violence is kept to a minimum. And let's hope this moves forward peacefully.
Hopefully. Yaroslav, what do you think has happened in the town of Bucha? Is it staged and meant to smear Russian army, as Moscow claims, or did it really happen?
Look, I'm sure it really happened. Unfortunately, it is not only in Bucha and Irpin. It's a lot of small city towns around Kyiv where I saw by my own eyes this, what happened. And result, sorry, but today we are with our activists sent 300 bags for dead bodies in Irpin and Bucha to gather our bodies.
Yeah, but who did it, Yaroslav? My question, I got to reword my question. It did happen, but who was responsible for this? Russia says there is no evidence at hand. And Lavenzia said when Russian forces were there, no such corpses were seen there, and that no proof has been offered.
Really? Are you believing in Russian media?
No, I'm asking you.
Do you want? I'm sure that it's Russian soldiers. I spoke with people who saw Russian soldiers. My friends was in Bucha. They was three weeks in the basement. Russian soldiers made this war crime. I'm from Mariupol, and the things which happening in my native town, what described my sister, my uncle, my other parents. that the things is much more worse than in Bucha, where you have seen in photos. There is crimes, there is rapes, there is death, there is murdering just for fun, and all for this responsible only one country, Russia. They murders, they making war crimes, and there is no doubt that they done it in others' town. So please don't even discuss is this true or not. Is it true? My friend saw it by my own eyes. I saw these dead bodies. It is true. Russia makes war crime every day. Every minute they killing people in Mariupol. Every minute they killing people in Kharkiv. They still there on our Ukrainian land.
Okay. Now, Mike, a Russian UN envoy, told Security Council today that the West doesn't care about Ukraine. They just want to undermine and weaken Russia. Do you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly, 100%. And I disagree with the guest, the member of parliament from Ukraine. The people that I talk to in Ukraine, and I've been to Ukraine a number of times, as a visitor, I have friends there, long-term friends, 10, 15 years, who are telling me exactly the opposite, that it is the Azov Brigade and the right sector that are committing the war crimes, and that they are being supplanted and reinforced with mercenaries from the West and mercenaries from other areas of the world that are helping, that are committing these war crimes against the Ukrainian people. Remember, the whole reason that Putin and Moscow intervened in Ukraine is because of the Ukrainian government shelling Ukrainian citizens living in the Donbas area, Lugansk, Donetsk. And so these things are not to be believed, that the Bucha was a Russian war crime. This is the type of thing that sets up a false flag to blame the other guy for the crimes you commit to win political sympathy from the global audience. And so I don't believe a word that the Russians are doing this. I've seen the Russians take great losses and trying to preserve Ukrainian civilian lives. And from what I see and from what I hear, talking to direct people on the ground in Ukraine who are longtime Ukrainian citizens, lived there for generations, this is to blame the Azov Brigade and the right sector and others who are committing these crimes. So let's be very clear about that this is an article of contention here, that we don't know the truth yet, because we're hearing conflicting stories from both sides. This is an information war at this point in time. Who's providing accurate information? And I do not believe anything the Ukrainian government says.
Okay. Yaroslav, go ahead, Yaroslav. And also tell us, because the West is talking about this, and you mentioned it. And Yaroslav, also tell me what the West has done. Offered help?
I have
Ukraine?
To answer to the liar, what's your name?
Oh, please don't call me a liar just because there's a disagreement on the facts.
From,
that doesn't mean I'm lying.
Thank you. I'm from Mariupol. My sister was there. My friends was there. You are a liar. You are saying lie about Ukraine.
I am not a liar. You now I resent the fact that you would accuse me of lying because there's different facts that you disagree with. That does not make me a liar.
Any right
one by one, gentlemen, please.
You are not in our country. You are not under shelling. You have not been in basements for 3 weeks without eat, without food, without electricity. And you are now saying that it is all fake? You spoke with some people. You are a liar. You have not spoke any Ukrainian people.
I've been in more war zones than you will ever be in your entire lifetime. So don't tell me what it's like to be in a war zone, my friend. Please do not. And do not insult me by calling me a liar. We're disagreeing on facts, okay? You have your version of facts. I have my version of facts.
Please be calm.
An honest disagreement does not make either party a liar. So please do not insult me.
Okay, please, Yaroslav.
Eating sons of drinking flat white. You are now saying Russian lies. I am from Mariupol. Azov now protecting my city. I am Russian speaker. Half of my family lives in Russia. But now I know the truth. Russia is killing our people. That it is only one truth. And when you're saying that we are attacking Donbas, I'm from Donbas. 15 kilometers from my home is Donbas, Donetsk region. We're not attacking. It's also a lie from Putin. So please, you could speak on other TV, but when you are speaking with me on TV, please don't tell these fakes. Russia war began because Putin wanted to destroy our country. Russian war now killing thousands of our people.
Okay, Yaroslav, can you please answer this question? Because the West is also saying, the U.S. and Europeans are also saying what you are saying. And how much help and assistance have the Western countries offered Ukraine?
There is some assistance, and we are very glad that we have more weapons to protect our country. But we need more. Of course, we need more sanctions, not from the West country, from others. From all countries which now protecting human rights, who protecting democracy, who protecting peace in our world, we need more sanctions. We want all companies to stop trading with Russia, because trading with Russia, it is pain for our death of our children, which have been raped in Bucha by the Russian soldiers, and such bastards like Mike now protecting them and others. We need more sanctions from European Union to switch off all Russian banks, to put embargo on oil and gas. We need more. Sorry, we now protecting not only our country. We are protecting all Europe. We are fighting for democracy. We are fighting with second largest army in the world. Yes, they are weak. They fighting with us 1 month and a half, and they still have not achieved any result. And the way they leave the Kyiv region is only one reason, because they are weak and they have not achieved the aim to occupy Kyiv. And they become failing in this region. But we need more. We need more sanctions, more weapons, more financial support.
All right, now, Mike, has the West and the U.S. in particular been truthful and sincere in their offer of assistance to Kyiv, or has Mr. Zelensky been left alone on his own and maybe even betrayed, as some people put it?
Well, let's look at how this conflict started. It started back in 2014 when Vicky Noodleman, call her Victoria Nuland now, toppled the duly elected Yanukovych government by a coup that the U.S. spent $5 billion to topple the duly elected government against the will of the Ukrainian people. So the entire Ukrainian government as it exists today is illegitimate on its face, because this was done by a coup. I was in Ukraine in 2004 during the Orange Revolution. I was there 2005, 6, 7, 8, 9, and I observed U.S. Army personnel on the ground training the Ukrainian military at that time. The hotel I was staying in Odessa, they were asking me what my unit was, because I have the you know, veterans today. I have the look and carriage of a military man to this day. But the U.S. is responsible for what's going on in Ukraine today. This has been NATO encroachment. They broke every agreement they ever made with the Soviet Union when the walls came down. They broke all the agreements about no Eastern expansion. That's all they have done, is relentlessly expanded eastward. This is the cause of this conflict, to where the expansion of NATO caused the Russian, and remember, Russia is not the former Soviet Union. It was the former Soviet Union that committed the atrocity of the Holodomor, where they starved 15 million Ukrainians. That was the Bolsheviks. That was the Jewish Bolsheviks who starved the Ukrainian people. And this animosity goes back a very, very long time. And so I would like to see peace brought to the area. I don't want to see any children killed. I don't want to see any women raped or brutalized or murdered. I don't want to see the young service, the active duty, killed in battle. I don't want to see any of this. I want this all to end. So let's find a way, let's focus on finding a way forward where everyone can live in peace and functionality and stop this destruction, this war. This is craziness here. But this goes back to what the United States did when they toppled the Yanukovych government back in 2014.
Okay. And also, Yaroslav, Russia was worried about NATO eastward expansion. It gave the warning several times, and Kyiv knew about this. Mr. Zelensky knew about this. And Russia, many analysts said that they are worried that NATO is getting closer and closer to Russian borders. And still, Kyiv insisted that they want to be part of NATO, and they didn't care about this red line on the part of the Kremlin. Why?
Because it is our choice. We're an independent country. We're not dependent on Russia. And it is our choice. And if we are we have been member of NATO, Russia will never attack our country. I don't want to respect any pro-Putin speaker like Mike. He's not telling the truth. It looks like he never been in Ukraine.
Yeah, I am killing
he
you.
Never speaks Ukrainian. And now he is just saying what he paid for to say.
That's a fact.
So, once again, Ukraine independent country, not U.S., not any other country responsible what we are doing here. I'm a member of the Ukrainian parliament. I know what's happening in my country and believe it was our choice. Our choice, like a choice of Putin, who once at the night, like Hitler, decided to attack my own country. He done it before in 2014 when he took the part of our country, Crimea and Donbass, my native Donbass. I have lived in Donetsk. I know what I am telling. And now he decided to destroy it. Destroy it in 1, 2, 3 days. He wants to make blitzkrieg. But mm-hmm. he failed. Because we have now a strong army. We are protecting our land. We will protect it. So if you want peace talk, no problem. No problem. It is only one choice by Putin. Take away his army. Take away it from our land. Not killing our people. We are not attacking anyone. Even mm-hmm. we are not taking Donbass. We are not taking Russia. They have decided to start war in our century.
Okay. Now, Mike, let's take a look at it from the other side of the story. NATO not accepting, actually, the request on the part of Kiev to be part of NATO. I think it was in 2008 that Germany stopped this. Why didn't NATO accept Ukraine to become part of it?
Well, because some reasonable people within NATO see that taking Ukraine into NATO would be a bridge too far that would provoke Russia, as it indeed has. And so I must disagree with the other guest that Ukraine at this point is not an independent country, because you're begging for food, you're begging for money, you're begging for weapons to fight this fight. So obviously you're not as independent as you think you are. You're highly dependent upon the West at this point in time. And the problem with Ukraine is the massive corruption within Ukraine, where you have Joe Biden laundering money, sending his son as the bag man. You have Nancy Pelosi sending her son as the bag man. Mitt right. Romney and many other politicians in the U.S. who are wired directly into the money laundering, the human trafficking, the organ trafficking, the weapons trafficking, the drugs trafficking that Ukraine has become a nexus of. And Putin mm-hmm. is there reacting to this, trying to get these elements out of there, because Putin's job is to protect Russia against any and all threats. And so by Ukraine, by making itself this hotbed of corruption, has made itself a target because of the bad management of the government of Ukraine. And so Ukraine should clean up their own act and stop these oligarchs who are bleeding the country to death, keeping the people in poverty while they themselves enrich themselves. And this is not a very healthy way to go. I would like to see a very healthy, vibrant, economically vibrant Ukraine, free of corruption. That's what I would like to see for the Ukrainian okay. people, regardless. That's what I would like for them to have is an uncorrupt government, the now same we as we deserve here in the U.S.
Okay, we have only 2 minutes. Yaroslav, could you tell us briefly, negotiations have been going on between Moscow and Kiev, and they say that some progress has been made, but fighting is still raging. What's the solution to put an end to this once and for all?
Look, I believe that now Putin is not going to have any solution. He's going to attack South and Donbass. Unfortunately, what we see in Kiev region and other parts of our country when he take off his soldiers, it is just a part of plan. He's regrouping it, and some of the soldiers come back in the southern part or eastern part. Unfortunately, we are now preparing for more fightings, because we know from Western intelligence and our own intelligence, he won't attack us. So it looks like Putin is playing negotiation, but his real aims and real target is the same, to destroy our country. And unfortunately, it's not the time for final negotiations, it looks like.
Mike, you have 30 seconds.
I'm sure we will.
30 seconds only for Mike, please.
I'm sure that we will win. I'm sure that we will, because we are protecting our land.
Okay.
And sorry, but once again, I don't know what such guests like
Yaroslav, we are out of time. Let Mike speak for 30 seconds.
Look, this guy said that we are not independent countries.
It's already a done deal. Russia has won.
You really said that? Have you lesson in geography or something like that?
Okay, that's the end of our show. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you, my guests. Editor of the Veterans Today, Mike Harris in Phoenix, Arizona, and member of the Ukrainian Parliament, Yaroslav Zhelzinyk from Kiev.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام میگذاره، همه این ارزش ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام صاحب السلطان كراكب الأسد يغبط بموقعه وهو أعلم بموضعه.
Imam Ali stated, "The holder of authority is like the rider on a lion. He is envied for his position, but he well knows his position." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's To My Brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. Dear brothers and sisters, we learn so much from the beautiful and all-encompassing universal persona of Imam Ali. Now, because Imam Ali, alayhi salam, was connected with the divine, he was connected with his loving Lord, his sustainer. Imam Ali was connected with the Almighty Allah. And thus the knowledge and wisdom which flowed through this divinely appointed Imam is truly everlasting. It is permanent, despite the passing of time and history. We find that the sayings and the words and the manners, the behaviors, the characteristics of this divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, are truly these gems of wisdom which are applicable in all of our lives in the present day. What is interesting is that in this holy month of Ramadan, we can benefit from these words and these statements from Imam Ali alayhi salam. For example, we find that His Eminence says, "If you show independence from others, you will be their equal. And if you give away something to a person, you will be their commander and ruler." We find, dear friends, in this beautiful statement from the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we find the importance of being independent from others. Now, of course, while we are independent from human beings, we should always remember, and likewise we should never forget, that we are dependent upon the Almighty Allah. And so our dependence upon the Almighty Allah will result in our independence from other human beings. And of course, if we become independent from other human beings, as Imam Ali says, we will become their equal. And this makes sense if you think about it, because if you are dependent on someone,